The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio. Coming up on the program today, we're going to talk about fall fruit, as well as growing indoors over winter. Our guest will be author Brian DeVore, and we'll answer your garden questions. It all starts right now.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Welcome to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Thank you for hanging out with us for the next hour, whether you're listening to us on one of the 15 radio stations broadcasting our program here in 2021 through a radio app, through our parent website, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, under the Season 5 tab at the top of the page, podcast replay or in-studio video replay or any way that you're capturing it. Thank you for being with us. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
If you want to be part of the program, you can certainly do that by a couple of different avenues, one being the 1-800-927-SHOW phone line, 1-800 toll-free coast-to-coast, 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW. 1-800-927-7469. If you'd rather not talk to us but send us an email, you can do that. You're welcome to at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. If you have a descriptive message of what is wrong with this or how can I fix that, give us a couple of different images. You can, you know, tight one, a fall, a one far back, so we can kind of see the landscape of what's going on with the situation you need help with. Or if you'd just like to say hi, we welcome that too. Wherever you may be listening, let us know. Big show lined up for you. Holly, let's get into it. We're going to talk about fall fruit.
Yeah, so fall fruit, I mean, a lot of times people think when fall fruit is ripe, what's the first one they think of?
Apples?
Apples, yeah.
Pears.
So, pears. and then pumpkin, which technically isn't a fruit, it's like a vegetable, but
yeah, I don't know,
people probably just
pumpkin
like
tree
that,
I know that,
shout that out.
Yeah, I know that, yeah. That, you know, there's some squashes that actually were designed or had, you know, would grow up the stalk of a tree and then hang over the limbs. Some of the smaller fruit, some of the smaller squashes, that's actually what those do. Pumpkins, I don't think, fall underneath that category of climbing up a tree and then dangling off. You'll see the fancy arbors, arches with the cattle panels, and you'll have the fruit hanging down. But apples and pears, when you say fall fruit, are your 2-1-2 punch.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really, you know, a thing to go apple picking.
Well, here's the thing about apple picking. If you've got an apple farm, that's the best thing ever because people are paying you to do your work.
Pretty much.
Here's $20. Now I'll go out and pick some apples for you.
Right. And then also you have other
opportunities. Oh, but it's a great little date. No, it's a little romantic. You know, and then you get mad and you throw apples at each other's heads. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
Apples at each other's heads.
I don't know what goes on
there. What kind of aggressive apple picking have you gone on?
I've not gone on any apple picking. I think that's how it would end with us.
Maybe. Well, okay.
Yeah.
People don't need to know that.
Okay.
So anyway, apples is one of them. In Wisconsin, a lot of people know about cranberries because Wisconsin produces a lot of cranberries.
Right. And cranberries, they grow in, for people who may not be familiar, they grow in bogs or low-lying, small, shallow ponds. They are grown in dry, and then they flood them in order for the berries, they agitate the berries. The berries have four air pockets or an air cavity, and that's what allows them to float, and they harvest them much easier. You can grow cranberries in a container on your porch, patio, or deck, or in your garden. They take a little different level of acidity, and you can grow them. But you need to have a lot of cranberries in order to get a volume of enough for a consumption of some sort. You don't like I like the fresh cranberries. I'll eat the canned cranberries. Mm-hmm. You're not a fan of really either cranberry.
No, not at all. Not at all. But that's okay. So, yeah. So, figs, I when I was looking into the fall fruits, I didn't realize figs were a seasonal fall fruit, but that's the thing. And then grapes, you had a thing about Labor Day.
Right. Where I'm from, Southern Illinois, usually the grapes, and I couldn't tell you, they're purple. That's all I know. They've been around since before I was around. And it's about a 20-yard patch hung on fencing and very large 8-inch like telephone pole fence post at purple. And they usually are ripe around the early portions of September, Labor Day, second week in that area. And then that's about the life cycle. They come back next year, but that's when they are ready, that particular variety. I know other varieties, just like, you know, every other type of thing, garlic, tomatoes, they all ripen at different stages. And that's the only experience I know from grapes.
Right. And I think you're right. Grapes are, I think it's the Concord grapes, maybe, if they're purple.
They're purple, but they have a seed in them. Mom would make grape juice and grape jelly and grape jam and grape whatever, grape pie. People always raved about how wonderful her grape pie was, because that apparently was a thing that hadn't been around for years.
Oh.
Grape pie.
That sounds pretty good.
Do you make grape pie? We'd like to hear from you. GardenTalkRadio@gmail.com if you make grape pie.
Right. Grape pie. So guava.
Not great. Grape.
Grape.
Yeah.
Grape.
You got to pop your peas on that one. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Guava. Now, these are not, this does not always mean you can grow this in everything we say here in all growing zones. Not, guava. Yeah. Guava needs a little bit more warmer weather.
Your backyard may vary on, so keep that in mind. Not saying that some of these couldn't be grown in a dwarf variety indoors or in a controlled environment.
Greenhouse. Like key limes you can probably grow indoors for sure. And that's another one that will be ready around this time of year.
And then passion fruit is another one, early to mid-fall. And let's talk about the one-two punch, pears. And pears come in all shapes, sizes, varieties. Some are more plain than others.
We used to have a pear tree.
Used to have a pear
tree. Well, it's still kind of there, but
the tree is there. The pears are no longer. It was there before we moved onto the property. Nobody really knew much about it. It's 40 to 50 foot tall. Circumference is over 30 foot, and every bit of what we calculate around 2,000 pounds of pears, and they would fall and smash on the ground. We harvested one year 396 pounds, and somebody said, well, how do you know that? I said, because I weighed them.
Right.
We juiced them. We made everything possible with pears, but we don't have that anymore. There are places that you can look at. Marketplace is a location that is a Facebook buy and sell platform that people will offer buckets of pears for X amount of dollars. Or you go pick and you know, $5 for a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket of pears, whatever. So if you're looking for fall fruit and you don't want to go to pick your own farm, or maybe one's not close to you, there may be, you know, come pick all these pears for free, whatever the case is. You know, look around, do a little research, ask at your church group or your whatever group you may be part of, put a message out there. Somebody will know something that will help you out. That's one of the things that, you know, teachers know teachers, farmers know farmers. Usually somebody, you put it out there, somebody will get you an answer to the question you're looking for on that particular platform. So pears.
But you typically don't go pear picking.
That's not as romantic as apple picking.
No, not
at all.
I don't know why. But that's okay. Pears, yeah, and then persimmons. You knew about this one.
Persimmons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the persimmon trees. I don't think I've ever had a persimmon. I know there's like persimmon jam or jelly. Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Okay.
A lot of people get really excited about the persimmons.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I know that people grow them in their backyard or wherever, and then they are very into this.
Okay. Key lime. Obviously, in the northern portion of the United States, key lime is not outdoor growing, but you can grow it indoors. We grow, what do we get? We got a dwarf orange tree. We had a dwarf lime tree for many years, and it got scale very, very bad. And one of these things, scale is one of these things that if you get it, it's almost virtually impossible to get rid of unless you're babying 24/7. Scale is I don't know what's the best way to describe scale.
It's basically little insects that grow or
attach themselves
to the leaves of the plant, and then they like are like a tick almost.
Yeah, and it's just unless you strip the tree down and repot it, and it's once you've got it, and there's some ways in which the tree does get the scale, even if it's isolated by everything else. It's a time thing before it's all said and done.
So persimmons, back to persimmons.
Yes, yeah.
They look almost like a weird tomato.
Okay.
Like a very meaty tomato. And people make jam with them.
Well, it's not so much around. It's round, but like somebody sat on the top of it to flatten it out. Yeah.
People make jam out of them. And then also they make like baked goods like bread, pies, etc. Or you could do like a cheese and persimmon. So they complement cheese well.
Okay, kind of like wine and cheese, persimmons.
Yeah, people do like jam and cheese, okay, so persimmon right. must be a little bit sweeter like that. So that's the persimmons. I just know like people like to grow them, and they get very excited when it's time for them to be ripe.
Now, I don't remember, and I thought it was one of these, and somebody's going to email in at gardentalkradio@gmail.com with this answer. Maybe it is persimmons. You cut it open and the seed is either a spoon or something else, and that helps predict how bad the weather is going to be in your region. You cut it open and you split the seed, and if there's a spoon, I forget if it looks like something else, I think that's the persimmon, but could be totally wrong. But there is a fruit that you open it up and it will give a prediction of what the...
Somebody's screaming at the radio right now, yeah. And they're like, it's not the persimmon. Or it is. I don't know.
But back to... And with the dwarf varieties, you can have dwarf lemon, dwarf lime, dwarf orange, dwarf pomegranate. There's a lot of different... And the reason why the dwarf varieties work is because they have a scion or a specific type of root that they graft on the tree itself. They graft the top part onto the bottom part, and that's why it's much more controlled. It's not like you would get a normal tree stock at your nursery and plant an apple, pear, or peach or anything like that. So that's why they very well. They typically second or third year they'll produce fruit, and we got quite a bit of limes on our tree when we did have a very healthy tree.
We did. We had quite a few.
Two or three dozen a year, very easily.
And now we have an orange tree.
Right.
So that hasn't produced yet, but we purchased it at the, I don't know.
Early on in the pandemic.
Probably
back,
about
you know, back,
18 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully this season we'll get some
right.
Some
and the mistake we made with the lime tree was, in the summer we took it out on the porch, and in the fall we brought it back in. It needs a minimum of 65 degrees Fahrenheit, so taking it out of our whatever you want to call climatized home and putting it outside, the fluctuation was so great that it was literally dropping its leaves.
Right.
And it set it back. It didn't fruit the year that it was supposed to because that transition was too much. So we leave it in the kitchen next to the south-facing window year-round now, and it's much happier.
Yeah.
We learned from the lime, and right. Now we're doing that with the lemon or the orange. We're not taking it out.
So hopefully we'll get some fruit of some sort.
Now, when we say lime, we all know what a lime is. It was, about a third of the size or three quarters of what a normal lime would be. They were much larger than a golf ball, but not as big as a lime that you would get at the store.
Yeah. It was like, well, it's a dwarf fruit tree.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So those are some fall fruit. It's not just apples and pears. Kind of look around, see what's in your area that you could benefit from, whether you're making jams, jellies, or just wanting some fresh fruit to harvest. Speaking about having and knowing what you're eating, Walton's Incorporated has everything but the meat in order to make things more peace of mind for you.
Yeah, the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you today by our sponsor, Walton's Inc. Listen, we know you care about where your food comes from. Canning and preserving your fruits and vegetables is great, but what about the meat? At Walton's Inc., you can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. You want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created MeatGistics.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. They even have a full line of their own meat grinders, mixers, sausage stuffers to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's is everything but the meat.
And seasoning, and great seasoning as well. So when we come back, it's going to be, we talked about fall fruit. We're going to talk about growing indoors over winter, what you could seriously actually grow and produce in your home over the winter months. You're listening to The Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code RADIO21 and get 15% off your entire order.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online. Straight from the farm, fields, and briar patch, Piper and Leaf Artisan Tea is a tea like you've never imagined it. Get our award-winning tea delivered right to your front door and become part of the Piper and Leaf family. Free shipping over $75 at PiperandLeaf.com.
Turf experts always say lawn season begins in the fall. It's the time to help grasses recover from summer stresses and thicken up so it can come back strong in the spring. This fall, you can fertilize, aerate, and dethatch your lawn using just one fantastic liquid product. It's called Lawn Force 5, a five-way lawn care kit in a bottle. Lawn Force 5 gives you a lush, healthy lawn you can be proud of. It improves your soil in a way that gives your lawn great color, using 75% less nitrogen than typical lawn fertilizers. Visit our friends at natureslawn.com to find out more about this amazing Lawn Force 5 product. That's natureslawn.com. The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Pro Plugger, Dripworks, Walton's Incorporated, Tree Diaper, Janie's Mill, Phylum Bioproducts, Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Nature's Lawn and Garden Incorporated, Deer Defeat, Dr. Jim's, Root Maker. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy you're hanging out with us today. So take a we're getting into the fall here, so why don't you take a moment and think about how is your garden now? How was your garden? Are you done gardening? Did you have problems with, let's say, not hydrating your plants properly? Well, Tree Diaper has the products that will fix that so you have a better garden next year.
Yeah, if your plants could talk, they might have a few complaints about how things were handled this year in regards to watering. Maybe too much, too little. How do you water properly? You can take the guesswork out by using up the Tree Diaper. Tree Diaper is a revolutionary watering system that stabilizes soil moisture by taking up excess water and slowly releases it when plants need it. The Tree Diaper is filled with water from rain or when you water and slowly releases water over 3 weeks. No pipes, hose, or electricity needed. Whether you're a first-time gardener or advanced, Tree Diaper will improve the way you water your plants. It's made in the USA. You can find out all the sizes they have available at treediaper.com. Tree Diaper will keep your plants happy. That's treediaper.com.
So let's talk about growing indoors over winter. And I don't mean just, a few things. We're going to go over a list of things in which you can actually grow really successfully. We have done this and you can do it as well. First of all, many people think that whenever it's, some people may just want a break from gardening. But when we talk about growing indoors, many people think, oh my goodness, we got to do a grow light. We got to get a grow light, expensive grow light. Well, that's not always the case. Happy Leaf LED has they have professional grade grow lights with a home gardener's affordability. Very well made in the USA. And they have a light spectrum that the owner and the creator and the founder understands what plants need in the light spectrums. And he has put that in the light so the plants can get what they need. So we've got Happy Leaf LED grow lights. Now, that is not you have to get this in order to grow successfully indoors over winter. But my goodness, it certainly helps when you have the adequate amount of light the plants are requiring. You can grow things in a three-season porch or on a south-facing window without the aid of a grow light, and it will do somewhat well, and we have had things grow fairly well. But again, having that supplemental light available to the plants when the plants need it makes all the difference in the world on the success of what those plants should be producing.
Right. So definitely you want to consider grow lights, especially if you want to grow a lot indoors.
And then you can use those grow lights for seed starting in the spring.
Right.
So it's not like a one-time use thing.
So if this is your first... my favorite part about growing indoors is...
Do tell.
Is just having... obviously we love to garden. And so it's just an extension of that. So it's nice to have, we had some cherry tomatoes, or we have cherry tomatoes.
We have, yeah.
And then that one year we grew a bunch of beans.
Mm-hmm.
And then even one year we grew...
Cucumber.
So sometimes
it's, we did that in a very, very large grow tent. That was a project many, many years ago. But we were able to do that. You had a fresh cucumber on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, something like that.
Something like that. So, yeah. So that's what I like about it. But you definitely want to... set up a grow light area, or even just an indoor grow area if you're using the outside light. Just have an established area, and that way if you have small children or curious pets, you might have to block them off.
Right. Now, think about temperature. Temperature is key. Now, if you're going to do it in the corner of the basement and you don't have a climatized basement and you're using a grow light, a lot of this stuff's not going to do very well, because what we have to keep in mind is we need to mimic what conditions these things would grow best at during the summer months. So if a green bean, you want between 70 and 80 degrees and a lot of light and a lot of moisture, the basement in the corner of unclimatized basement, whether it's 42 degrees most of the time, and maybe you'll get up to 55 on a warm day, not going to cut it. Not going to work well. You got to think about, what do you want to grow? Is it feasible? Is it possible for you to do that indoors? And if it is, then those are the steps in which you need to do so you can be successful, because there's no point in doing all this if all it's going to be is a failure.
Right. You definitely want to set yourself up right. But you also can have fun and experiment and see what works. So, there's things that I would say will definitely grow indoors. And then there's things that probably won't or will not. But, you can, if you have kids or just for yourself, you can always give things a try.
So let's talk about some of the things that we have successfully grown, because there's no point of us talking about things that you could grow that we failed at or most people failed. But we want to tell you success stories. That's because if we can do it, then you can do it very easily. Cherry dwarf tomatoes. We've got three of them growing right now underneath two Happy Leaf LED grow lights. They've been there since we started the seeds in February, and we've probably got 30 to 60 cherry tomatoes off of them, and they're still producing. You got to keep in mind, you have to watch them just like you would an outdoor plant. They're suffering from a little lack of potassium right now. They're a little purple in the leaves, so we've supplemented some liquid fertilizer for them, and we cut off some of the dead leaves and tie them up to stakes, and they're 30 inches tall, and they got a lot of flowers on them right now. So, and they're in 1 gallon grow bags from rootmaker.com, and you get the grow bags of Radio 21 to save 15% off your order. 1 gallon grow bags. That's what works very, very well for this application. Everybody says bigger is better. We find 1 gallon grow bags. You keep them hydrated. You keep it fertilized. These tomatoes will grow very, very well. And we've got one at a friend's. She does not have a Happy Leaf grow light. She has a west-facing window. And the plant is about 30 inches tall, and it's producing 5 or 6 cherry tomatoes every week. So you can do it without a grow light.
Right, you certainly can. And that's a really good point. So beans, and when we say beans, we mean like bush beans.
Mm-hmm.
So we did this with success, and it's a good, fun option. I know even like sometimes school, like elementary school children will plant a bean and watch it grow, and then if they bring it home and keep it by the window, a lot of times it will produce beans. So they grow pretty prolifically.
Now, we're not talking that you're going to have enough beans, and you could, but in most situations, you're not going to have a dozen or two dozen bean plants growing, producing like you would in a raised bed. Maybe, you know, two or three in a 10-gallon grow bag, something like that would work very well. And a bean plant in healthy conditions, producing as it would in the ground outdoors, if you can mimic that condition, you can get several meals off of it. It's not like you're going to get two beans here and one bean. You can get 5, 6, 8, 12 beans off some of these varieties of bush bean plants.
Right.
So you multiply that by three, you've got a pretty good little meal there that you've grown indoors.
Right. So this is a popular one, and you definitely don't need much light for it, is greens. So whether it be microgreens, lettuce, like leaf lettuce, or...
Well, let's talk about microgreens or sprouts.
Sprouts.
Yeah, let's talk about it. You don't need anything. You don't even need light for sprouts.
No.
So can you explain to people who may have heard that but don't really understand, what is it and how does one grow sprouts that can be produced and consumed within like 72 hours?
Right. So this is more of the bean sprouts or the seed sprouts, whatever you want to call them. And a lot of people use like radish seeds or broccoli seeds,
mm-hmm.
Anything kind of in that cruciferous type
family. We tried it with squash, zucchini seeds.
So
yeah, that was not. Don't do that. Don't do that.
So you want to anything within like the cruciferous type family. So broccoli, radishes, probably you can even do like kohlrabi or Brussels sprout seeds. And all you do is you take a mason jar or any sort of glass jar, quartz. It could be like an old spaghetti sauce jar, mayonnaise jar, or something. And you put, we use screen, old screen, but some people use like old pantyhose or something that has, you know, like a mesh-ish effect. Put that around the top. You can use rubber band or a canning ring. And then you put your seeds in there, put your top on, and then you just soak them in some water, rinse the water out or dump the water out, and you leave them. And you do this twice a day. For the first 2 days, and then they should start to sprout, and you can do it once a day. And then all of a sudden, you'll have a whole jar of sprouts. And as Joy said, you don't even need sunlight. If you live in an apartment, you can do this by your sink.
And there's sandwich shops that you can, when you, you know, what do you want on your sandwich? You can have sprouts put on it.
I don't know if they have them as much as sandwich shops, because I know there was like a salmonella.
Can't you buy sprouts in the store?
But you can buy sprouts in the store.
I'm sure they're unbelievably expensive.
I'm not sure, but yeah. So it's definitely an option, is the sprouts, and to grow them. And you don't, and that's something fresh that you can have.
Right. Radishes are another thing. And now radishes, yes, are a root crop, but you can grow them. Now, the thing with radishes, we want to remember what do and how do they grow and what do they like when they grow outside. They like chilled soil. They don't like it to be hot. They don't like it to be 80 degrees and all this stuff. So that may be one of those crops that if you do have that unclimatized room or basement and you have that grow light, that you could mimic very early spring chilled soil that those radishes could grow fairly decent in that condition. And you could, you know, it's not, you know, it would be very well suited for an unclimatized basement with the proper amount of light.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And the other thing would be on that would be carrots. Now, not necessarily the big long carrots, but I think they're called button carrots, or they're just little round carrots.
Yeah.
That can be done as well. We talked about in the first segment, dwarf fruit trees that you can grow indoors. Dwarf meaning they're smaller size. Lime, lemon, persimmon. What am I missing? There's about a dozen or so different dwarf variety trees in which one can grow in their home, and they
even pomegranates.
Pomegranates, yes, that can be that can produce very heavily. Now the fruit is not the same size as the actual, you know, the big plant. But it produces prolifically, and with the right conditions and the right know-how, you can have these trees last for many, many years and produce every year for you.
Right. And I think it's definitely worth the investment if you enjoy that fruit or if you just want to grow something cool. I know like a lot of people think it's neat. I've decorated our
former lime tree.
Our former lime tree
now
for
orange,
Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun, different. So I would highly encourage it.
and many other things we can grow. But herbs are a very easy thing to grow that we've hung in hanging baskets next to our south facing window. We've done sage, we've done rosemary, we've done cilantro and party cups, to where we grow a party cup, and there's a video. There's a couple of videos on our website. Just search growing cilantro year round, and we show you the technique and how you can grow enough for one meal in a party cup, and you succession plant multiple party cups, and every week you can have more cilantro year round. Because when you try to grow outside, you put it in the ground and it bolts, you know, within a week. This way you can control how much you're growing, and the conditions in your home are favorable to where it will grow properly, produce about 2 cuttings off of it, and then you can plant more. So it works out really well. Growing cilantro year-round, you just go to our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and put that in the search engine, and you'll find that out, see how we do that. And other herbs, just they do very well in the window, low-light conditions, don't need a grow light, and you can have very good, prolific herbs. Basil, I don't know how I miss basil.
And they sell all these herb kits now.
Yeah.
I mean, they sell them. I've seen them in big box stores, in smaller garden centers where it's like grow your own herbs. And they have, I mean, there's other things that you can grow inside. You'll see them, especially like in the spring, that it's like grow this flower indoor or whatever. So it's becoming more and more a thing. And if maybe you want a simpler, or not necessarily even simpler, but like a more streamlined setup, there's all sorts of other growing indoor products that you can find. So definitely look into that. But again, like, you don't even need something growing like the sprouts or the microgreens. You don't even need light for that.
Well, that being said, Holly, summer is basically over based on the temperatures that we're seeing in the northern portions of the United States. And the kids are back in school. Nights are getting cooler and days aren't that warm either. And we've all forgotten about our lawn. Well, we shouldn't have done that.
Right, just because it's fall, we don't want to forget our yards and those pesky Japanese beetles. They may be gone, but they're not far away. Not only do they feast on your roses and berries this summer, they laid eggs in your turf.
Well, they've feasted on our green beans, our beans, our yacons. We don't have time to go through the red, but they had a good time.
So you want to take a stand with Phylum's GrubGon? GrubGon is a non-chemical BT granular that specifically targets scare pests and their larvae. You simply add the granular with a spreader, irrigate it into the soil, and let the naturally occurring bacteria do its job.
Not only is GrubGon easy to use, but the best part about it, it's the only non-chemical choice that effectively controls those grubs. And the best part about it, it's non-toxic to bees, pollinators, and other beneficial insects. So you don't have to get down or worry about getting it on the flowers for those insects to take back to their hives to toxify their hives and kill them off. It's GrubGon from PhylumBioProducts.com. That's PhylumBioProducts.com. BioProducts.com. BioProducts.com. PhylumBioProducts.com. Do not go anywhere. When we come back, Brian DeVore will be with us, author. You're listening to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now, 1-800-927-SHOW.
Tired of dealing with bugs but don't want to use harmful chemicals to repel them? Naturally Green No More Bugs is all natural and plant-based. No more chemical bug repellent. Use it around your home and on you, indoors and out. DEET free and will not stain. Repels mosquitoes, ticks, fleas, roaches, ants, flies, and more. No More Bugs is the answer to what is bugging you. Stop using harmful chemicals and use what is safe for you, your family, pets, and the environment. For more information, visit natgreenproducts.com. natgreenproducts.com.
Protect your plants against damage with a 3-in-1 plant guard and special blend fertilizer. Visit ivyorganics.com. Dig planting holes from a comfortable standing position. Step, twist, pull, and plant. Visit proplugger.com.
Brought to you by Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardens, farms, landscaping, and more. Visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com or call 262-497-8539 to find their products nearest you. The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Simply Earth, Seed Savers Exchange, Quick Snap Sprinklers, Water Hoop, Timber Pro Coatings, Bloomin' Easy Plants, Pomona Universal Pectin, Ivy Organics, Tiger Torch, Happy Leaf LED, Seedlink. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Moments away, Brian DeVar. But first, do you have yellow jackets in your area? Rescue has the tool that can help rid them from your place.
Yeah, during these dry summer months and as we move into fall, you'll notice more aggressive yellow jackets flying around. They're looking for your barbecue meats, sweet drinks, as well as water sources. So you want to keep them at bay with Rescue Yellow Jacket traps. Rescue Yellow Jacket traps are eco-friendly, do-it-yourself option to keep those stinging pests away from you. These traps use a powerful lure for yellow jackets and will not attract beneficial honeybees. All Rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com to find where to buy all Rescue products, yellow jacket traps, and other pest control solutions. That's rescue.com. Mm-hmm.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Brian DeVore is a journalist who, for the past 30 years, has specialized in writing about agriculture, the environment, and natural history. He is also the author and contributor to many publications, including his own book, Wildly Successful Farming, Sustainability, and the New Agricultural Land Ethic. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Well, we want to thank you for taking time out and not only going to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country.
Yeah, this is it's a fun time to be looking at issues like agriculture and soil health and gardening and all of that.
So let's start with this question. What is a land stewardship project, or what is land stewardship?
Yeah, so the Land Stewardship Project, the organization I work for, we're based out of Minnesota, but we work throughout the upper Midwest, and we're a farmer-based membership organization that works with farmers and who are interested in doing stewardship or sustainable type practices, which are, you know, stewardship, kind of the basic idea behind that is you're stewarding that land and handing it off to the next generation better than you found it. But kind of working, dovetailing with that is sustainability and sustainable agriculture or regenerative agriculture, which is kind of the idea that you are using practices that don't mine the soil, that don't kind of take away more resources than you can put back into it, and you're kind of helping the land kind of regenerate itself and sustain itself through practices that, I guess an example would be, for example, if you're using cover crops, they can really help build that soil health in a way that you don't have to resort to constantly trying to add chemical-based fertilizers and nutrients that land, that soil can kind of build its own fertility and that, its own health. So that's, you know, we've had a very productive food production system over the last 100 years or so, especially since World War II, but we're starting to see some negative impacts of that where the land is not really able to sustain itself into the future without constant application of these outside inputs. So we're working with a lot of farmers who are looking at things like organic, but also just what we would call in general sustainable or regenerative agriculture.
So are you working, or is there like agricultural chemical farmers, I call big ag, are do you see people come to you and go, hey, I need help, I've got to change something, what I'm doing is not working, can you help me figure out how to make this work better on my end as a farmer?
Exactly. We're starting, particularly right now, we're in the middle of what I would call kind of a little bit of a revolution or a real, there's a lot of buzz around what we would call soil health, which is kind of, as I alluded to earlier, this idea that you can build your soil's health through some of these practices that build that soil biome, build up that carbon, and kind of help it be resilient in the long term. And so we hold a lot of field days and workshops for farmers, and we're seeing an increasing number of what I would call conventional farmers come to these field days and workshops, and that's something maybe they wouldn't have attended in the past. But they're starting to see some of the shortcomings of a system that's reliant on so many outside inputs, and in a sense is kind of mining that soil of nutrients. They're seeing maybe some crop failures they hadn't seen in the past. They're seeing issues with not being able to manage water. With climate change, we're seeing a lot of impacts on agriculture there. So they're looking for ways to kind of make that soil and their land more resilient in the face of kind of extreme weather events. We're also seeing an early conservation practice or stewardship practice was no-till agriculture, which is a great way to save soil. It's because you're not disturbing that soil, you're not plowing up that soil. And it's done a lot of good, but we're starting to see some farmers who were pioneers in that realizing that there's some limits to what that can do, that you need to maybe also integrate more diverse cropping systems like cover crops, diverse rotations with livestock doing rotational grazing type systems. So we are starting to see a lot more conventional farmers show up to a lot of these events.
Well, I grew up on an agricultural farm, a conventional farm, and just the fertilizer alone, that cost was astronomic per so many pounds per acre or tonnage per acre. By doing it in a way that almost the land, you can do it naturally, saves a lot of money in the pocketbook of these farmers who are very working on very, very thin margins to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And that is, as we see the science advance on some of these practices, we are seeing a lot of good numbers come out around, you know, if you build that soil's natural fertility or ability to resist weeds or insect pests, you can save a ton of money on chemicals. You don't have to constantly be reliant on going and buying those chemicals to kind of prop up that system.
That's very helpful information. Now, tell us about your book, The Wildly Successful Farming, Sustainability, and the New Agricultural Land Ethic. What can our listeners expect when they pick up a copy?
Yeah, so this is a book. I wrote it for the University of Wisconsin Press. And it's kind of a combination of, I'm telling the stories of several farmers that I've met over the years. Part of my job is I have a really cool job in that through the Land Stewardship Project, I get to travel around the Midwest and interview farmers who are doing some of these innovative practices. And so over the years, I've kind of noticed some, common threads that these farmers share and some of the ideas, some of the reasons that they got into this and some of the practices that are working for them and other practices that aren't working for them. They're real innovative and real experimental in a lot of what they're doing and often kind of out there on their own doing this stuff. So the book kind of tells some, it's a series of profiles of some of the farmers that I've met over the years. And the common theme is these are farmers who really refuse to separate kind of the wild part of the land from the domesticated agricultural part of it. They've been able to blend some of their practices, some of their kind of production practices of crops and livestock into some of the natural systems out there. And I guess an example of that would be, for example, I go back a little bit to the soil health issue. There's a farm family that I profile who were able to build their soil health so extensively that there was a time when some grasshoppers came into their county and was kind of decimating small grains and really haven't gone to town on their neighbor's fields. And they did not impact their fields because they had built their soil health to such a point that their small grains crops had a real high sugar content, and the grasshoppers, when they were feeding on those crops, actually got intoxicated. So it's examples like that where maybe instead of going in and spraying and killing all the grasshoppers as well as the beneficial insects, they were able to kind of use the land's natural systems. I've also seen examples where farmers were able to put in wildlife habitat that is a host to, say, beneficial birds and beneficial insects who help kind of fight those pests that aren't so beneficial to a farm. Rotational grazing, managed rotational grazing is a really big thing being used by livestock farmers now, where they're kind of using that traditional system of the way the bison used to rotate through the tall grass prairie and produce meat and milk, kind of using those rotational systems, using perennial grasses, perennial forages, that type of thing. So I talk a little bit about that. I profile these farmers, and then I also talk about some of the barriers that they face. Because, you know, it's great to talk about all these ideas, but there are some significant policy and market barriers that kind of make it so not every farmer can do this type of thing.
So we are talking with Brian DeVore, a journalist and an author that has written all about agriculture, environment, and natural history.
So maybe for people who are listening and they go, okay, well, that's great. The farmer can now transition more to a natural means. What is the time frame that a conventional farmer comes to you and says, here's what I want to do on 40 acres? How long is that time frame before the completion of the task is done?
Yeah, that's a good question. So often the short answer is your task is never done. It's kind of a continuum.
Right.
But that said, what's really kind of exciting, and I go back to this kind of the innovations we're seeing with soil health right now. What's exciting about that is we're seeing conventional farmers who come in, maybe they start getting a more diverse rotation of crops in there. They start putting in some cover crops, you know, and cover crops is basically a system where you're putting in small grains and brassicas and other kind of non-cash crops in between your growing season. Like right now, they would, when they harvest in the fall, maybe they would put in a cereal rye or something like that, that overwinters, and that provides living roots in the system throughout the year instead of having that land bare through the winter and early spring. What we're seeing is with, say, for example, you start to build that soil biome with all those living roots in there and build that carbon, you can start to see some pretty significant improvements within 3 years. I've just talked to numerous farmers and been on numerous farms where that seems to be kind of the period of time. And that's where you're going to realize, kind of figure out if it's going to work for you and if it's something you can manage. It's that kind of 3 year period. With some of these cover crops, for example, you can see some impacts right away within a year, but for it to be a consistent part of your farm, really, it's that kind of three, maybe five year type of time frame that you're working with a little bit.
Okay. So what can backyard gardeners do that would be good for their soil and their land sustainability, just little changes that they can make?
Yeah. So that's, you know, a lot of these practices that these farmers are using, you're probably well aware of some of them. I mean, you can downscale to the garden level. And again, I go back to cover crops and really trying to keep that land covered 365 days out of the year. And cover crops are kind of misnamed. I mean, a lot of people think, well, isn't it good enough just to put some mulch down and keep that land protected? And that does do a lot of good. It keeps it from eroding and keeps it from being exposed to inclement weather. But the beauty of cover crops and planting those crops, say, in the fall is, and they get started a little bit in the fall, and then, of course, the freeze-up will come and maybe get some snow on top of them. There's still living roots down in that soil doing the work of building that soil biome over the wintertime. So that's the real benefit. You know, I kind of almost prefer to call them continuous living cover, because you have some activity, some biological activity going on throughout the winter. And that is so beneficial to see that. I mean, other things they can do is, and a lot of these farmers that I write about in wildly successful farming do, is plant pollinator habitat adjacent to fields. And so you could definitely do that on the garden level, you know, have some pollinator habitat. It's going to help your vegetables and your fruits. And also it's going to attract beneficial insects that kind of feed on some of those bad critters out there that are kind of predators on your crops, on your vegetable crops. Composting is a really exciting area right now where, you know, everybody thinks they know how to compost, but there's some real new innovations now where people are making compost teas and using, there's some farmers we're working with right now in Minnesota who are experimenting with this something called the Johnson Sioux Bioreactor, which is a way of composting in a real intense manner and then making kind of an extract out of that and spraying it onto the fields. And that kind of kickstarts the biology. The beauty of that system is one of the farms we're working with is a vegetable, small vegetable operation. So you can downscale that to a smaller version, and they're going to make extract, and then they're going to be using that on their small vegetable plots. So there's some pretty exciting stuff out there. And we do have a lot of gardeners who show up to our soil health workshops, because these can be kind of, like I said, downscaled to their level. You know, a lot of the same practices that work on a 500-acre field will work on a garden, just on a smaller scale.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, we thank you for the time, the education, the knowledge you've shared with not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. How can people find out more about you? How can they get a hold of your book?
Yeah, you can go to my website is badevore.com. It's badevore.com. And there you can order the book there and find out more about some of the stuff we're doing.
Well, Brian, we absolutely appreciate the time you've offered us and the level of education you've shared with us in this short amount of time. We thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's Your Garden Questions, Our Garden Answers. You're listening to The Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
You move your lawn sprinklers all over the yard, but you always end up putting them in the same spots. Why not just bury them there? Out of sight, always ready to use, pre-adjusted to water the precise areas you want. Quick Snap Sprinklers makes it easy. In-ground sprinklers without the hassle or expense of laying pipe. Put the sprinklers anywhere in your lawn or garden. Snap on a hose to supply the water. Water on, it pops up. Water off, it drops below ground. You can mow right over it. You can have a buried sprinkler system up and running in just minutes. Each Quick Snap saves thousands of dollars. They install in minutes and operate for years. Visit quicksnapsprinkler.com. Rinse Kit, your hose on the go, pressurized water at your fingertips. Without pumping or battery, simply fill from your spigot or sink on your way out to the garden, beach, or anywhere. Spray it, wash it, Rinse Kit.
Did you know that all flour is not created equal? Janie's Mill carefully stone grinds all their certified organic wheat, rye, corn, buckwheat, and heirloom, and ancient grains, so that you get every bit of taste and nutrition nature intended. Some flours really are better than others, and you deserve the best. Get it at janiesmill.com.
The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Blue Ribbon Organics, Naturally Green Products, Ironwood Tool Company, Easy Step Products, Rinse Kit, Soul Brew Kombucha, Wild Delight, Rycon Vitova, Chip Drop, Bailbuster.com. Find all sponsors at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Question and answer time. We're going to jump right in it. If you got a question, send it on over. GardenTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's GardenTalkRadio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-7469. We had a couple of questions come in via phone call this week. So we're going to go to Laura, who is listening to us on Joy 1340 AM and 98.7 FM in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and see what she has to ask us.
Hi, my name is Lauren from Milwaukee. And I am wondering, as the temperatures will be getting colder here in a month or so, what can I should I bring in that's potted, and what should I leave outside? So there's some veggies, there's some flowers. What can stay in and what can stay out, and how do I know that? Have a good one. Bye.
All right, Lauren, not Laura. What can we do to help her on that? What can we bring in? What should we bring in? What should we not bring in over the winter?
So you really have to assess what you want to keep, what you want to grow next year. But one thing you can
what's
going to
be the easiest
what's
too
be the
yeah.
easiest, what you have space for. So anything you could do, you could overwinter peppers, or you could just bring those in. And same thing with like container tomatoes. And then also, even if you have like green beans in containers. You could bring those in.
Well, we're talking about, you know, if it's in, it's not so much you're digging it out of the ground, if it's in a container. This is key. You really don't want to dig things out of the ground and bring it. There's already going to be bugs and issues potentially with the containers in which you have that you're transitioning from outdoors to indoors.
Right. So, yeah, if it's in a container. Now, flowers, it all just depends on what you're trying to bring in, especially if it's something that is a bulb versus just a plant. But you can definitely experiment with those, especially if they're in a container. And you might have to do a little bit of research.
Right. It mileage may vary on the plants and the location in your backyard.
Well, that and wherever you live.
Yes.
It depending on what zone you're in, you might not even have to bring something.
Right. But in the Milwaukee area, it gets cold. So things,
for sure.
All right. Let's go to Jerry, who's listening to us on WAM, WAAM, 1600 AM and 92.7 FM out of Ann Arbor, Michigan.
My name is Jerry, and it's regarding the shape and size of the produce in my garden, specifically my pole beans, which I'm planting Kentucky Wonder and other varieties, but they're not coming out nice and round like a bean should look. They end up flat. I thought maybe I got the bad seed, but this has been going on for several years now. Also, some of my other produce, my peppers, et cetera, the plants are not as large and vigorous as they should be. Produce is somewhat on the small side. So I'd like your thoughts on that.
All right. Well, we have had this and do have this problem where the pole beans have this flat tendency, not the round. The bush beans are fine. We have Kentucky Wonder pole beans that are doing the same thing, and did not realize until Jerry called and then we did some research, this is a big problem.
Yeah, it appears to be a big problem. And one thing is that a lot of the times it's the bean you're using. So if you keep saving your seeds year and years after year, it kind of reverts back to whether it was hybridized or what, and that's why the beans are flat. But also, you have the issue of if you have extreme temperatures or a water situation where maybe it's getting too much water, not enough water, the bean is going to grow flat like that just because it has that variance in its climate.
Right. Remember that the half runner type beans have a natural tendency for genetic variations such as flat and or tough beans. So what do we do with this situation? We want to, if we are seeing this happen, we want to purchase from a reputable seed company. And if you are very concerned about this, you can pick the beans when they are at very small stage and or get a hold of the seed company and say, hey, here's what I'm doing, whether it's Seed Saver Exchange or some other reputable seed company. Do you or have you been seeing this in your seed stock? Because when they grow these seeds to full maturity, pop the pods and take the seeds out. So this is a problem that is occurring, at least on our pole beans. Our bush beans, we've seen no issue whatsoever. They've been as pretty can be.
Now, as far as the peppers for Jerry here, yes. I would definitely say get a soil test. I've actually had a number of people, it seems like this year, ask me, you know, my peppers aren't producing or this isn't producing like it used to. And I ask them, have you ever had a soil test? And they say no. Well, that's probably why, especially before you start dumping, you know, more phosphorus or potassium or something in your soil. Get a soil test.
Yeah, I'm just pulling numbers out of the air. $22 for a soil test versus buying $40 worth of fertilizer and not knowing if you're fixing the problem or potentially making the problem worse by over-fertilizing the soil, whether it's organic or inorganic. So that being said, we are out of time, and we thank you for yours. Did you miss any portion of the program today or would like to revisit it? You can do that by going to your favorite search engine and searching the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show podcast, or going to our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and finding it there. Or you can send us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and we will send you a link to the program. Do not miss the program next week. We're going to be covering feeding your soil. We talked about that in a question. Feeding your soil in the garden and the lawn in the fall and helpful kitchen hacks. Our guest will be author Steve Briggs and will answer your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.